An increasing purpose runs. This morning I stepped into the barber shop of Hotel St. Francis to get fixed up. As usual, the personnel was busy. Sometimes I go there in the morning, sometimes at midday, and sometimes in the evening. But the place is always well filled. I asked the barber who waited on me, then in turn, the manicurist, the shoe shiner, the cashier. Why is it that your customers do not all come to the shop at the same hour? Not one of them could give a satisfactory answer. Very likely, the problem had never occurred to them. But you and I suspect that the universal mind governs people in as simple an adventure as getting their hair cut or their shoes shined. Which leads us further to suspect that this mind may be directing us in all the affairs of the day and of the year, however tiny those affairs may be on the one hand, or however momentous they may be on the other. Sometimes we wonder what would happen if we yielded to that mind with less resistance than we usually put up. Most people like to assert what they call their own mind. But they do not have any mind of their own. True, there are baseless suggestions which whisper to them to do this or to do that. But there is no other mind than the universal one. And sooner or later, the most obstinate come under its direction. This explains why it is not that all people on earth try to crowd into one community. It explains why some of them busy themselves doing one sort of work and others doing a different sort. They do not all try to do the same thing and in the same place and at the same time, because they yield to the command of versatile mind. The advantage of acknowledging this mind as our director is that it is all-knowing. It makes no mistakes. It leads no one into failures or accidents. It does not lead them into sickness or old age. On the contrary, it keeps people perpetually safe, perpetually young, and perpetually pretty well satisfied. Occasionally, someone who listens to Universal Mind feels the urge to do some extraordinary thing, like building a supposedly impossible bridge, or effecting a union of nations that will keep them at peace with one another, or challenging by metaphysical methods the actuality of sickness and suffering. And right now, there is a Russian physician who says there is no use of growing old. And better than that, he believes he has a recipe for preventing it. What we need, then, is a willingness to acknowledge the presence of this resourceful mind and develop a willingness to listen for its instruction, rather than accept the foolish or devastating suggestions that try to engage our attention. Nobody can explain whence they come or why they should be permitted to operate, but many are finding that they can silence the mischief makers. Once they are silenced, no explanation is necessary. Then shall we walk this earth with confidence, with better health, with longer years. There's another universality called life. It is a near neighbor to mind. In fact, the two beneficent powers are equally yoked together. They operate in unison. Mind supplies the intelligence for the enterprise, and life supplies the animation. You see them at work everywhere. Observe the sap climb the tallest pine to build a twig. Mind directs it. Life enriches it. mind and life have other partners, chief among them being soul, love, principle. Some people are able to see, in principle, a synthesis of them all, which gives us a picture of God as plural or composite. He is one in one sense, but multiple in another. And when you and I speculate what we are, we become convinced, if we permit the speculation to proceed long enough and deep enough, that principle crops out in us and makes us what principle is, that is, a compound of perpetual animation, intelligence, devotion, morale, and the multitude of other spiritual qualities which go to make up the perfect man. Here is a hint of the truth which sets people free. Everybody is familiar with the Galilean's promise, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Today, people, in larger number than ever before, are grasping the enormous significance of those 12 words and trying to put them to work. This world is so full of marvels, apparent to anyone who walks out in it a few moments, either in the city or in the country, and forgets himself and his problems long enough to look, even casually, here and there. So much of the turmoil that boils and bubbles today springs from that widespread hunger expressed in the new word, gimme. In plain language, everybody wants money. Having acquired it, he wants more. The thirst is never satisfied. He thinks he has not very much faith or trust in anything else. It will give him power and security. Leaving the barber shop, I observed the reconstruction of an important building in full blast, a rare sight these days. An enormous amount of money is being spent, and at a critical period. Where does the money come from? Why, people, even you and I, are contributing to some courageous and resourceful man such funds as we can scrape together. We marvel at his fortitude in striking out on the venture. We might better marvel at our own fortitude in turning our money over to him to play with. Why do we do so? Because, after all is said and done, we trust that man, who perhaps we have never seen more than we trust our money. This brings out a finer side of the individual. His faith and trust are not altogether in the Almighty, but in the Almighty's men and women. You and I are trusting them all, with a few exceptions, and we would trust them in any real emergency. We put our property and even our lives in the hands of strangers. You do it right along. Which makes us consider how important are the things that abide. What are they? Chiefest among them, it is written, are faith, hope, charity. And the greatest of them is charity. These three eminences, stabilized by the common sense of the multitudes, guard civilization and ensure its endless unfoldment.